series, and this lecture is called The Dating Game. And the reason why it's called The Dating Game, because really it is a dating game. It's a game. People go on playing the game. But hopefully some people are serious, and for the serious people who need pointers, let's give some pointers. First of all, we have to discuss a bit about the conceptions in society today. We find in prior times, when a person was born, or shortly after, the parents made arrangements with the other parents for their children to sort of marry at a very early age, 12, 13, 14, 15. Obviously, in today's society, that's impossible. But when did this sort of system fall apart? If you have ever seen Fiddler on the Roof, you'll find that there's a song over there called Matchmaker, Matchmaker. And there was a system of matchmaking which is called a shadchan. A shadchan is someone who makes a shidduch, which is dates people, puts people together. So when did the system fall apart in terms of the Jewish world? And the answer is when the Jews caught a bug. What's the bug? The bug was called romance. The bug of romance. We find romance, the idea of romance was invented by the French, like other things as well. They invented this whole concept of romance, that a person falls in love. The idea that love is blind, the idea of romance, all these things were invented in France during the last quarter of the 12th century. It was formulated by one of the authors, Andrew Capellanus, and he has a book called The Art of Courtly Love. And over there, he spreads this idea of romantic love, which was carried to the countryside by troubadours. The singers, they would sing about romance and love and this and that. And eventually this idea, this concept took hold and spread rapidly throughout Europe until it reached even the narrow confines of the Jewish world. We find that the way that the regular world goes, that's the way the Jews goes. We're part of the melting pot. And the way around us, that's the way we adopt. We assimilate into the culture around us. So therefore, it's all started with this problem called romantic love. Let's discuss a bit about romantic love. Romantic love was conceived originally on two levels. First level is pure love. What is pure love? It's purely in the mind, but it has no physical fulfillment at all. For example, Romeo and Juliet. Pure love. Romance. And usually what happens is something happens to one of the couple. And that's romance. They spread this idea of just pure love. Romance is just pure love. The second kind of romance is mixed love, whose desires be fulfilled, however infrequently. Sometimes yes, sometimes no, but it's mixed, physical and pure. So it's not 100% pure. And this kind of love, it's interesting because this romantic love does not exist, according to the French, in marriage. It's purely outside marriage. It's very strange. If you think of all the love songs that have been written, how many love songs can you think of which are to do with love songs in marriage? All the love songs, one, right, I knew you were going to say that. One love song. All the others, they're all to do with extramarital or premarital or this and that and the other. And so that's one of the problems which is spread by romance. This idea of romance, this French concept, destroyed the world in terms of destroying relationships. And fill people's mind with this concept of falling in love, and therefore they don't know what to look for. They think, I'm going to fall in love. There's no, how many times people come to me and said, you know, Rabbi, I like her very much, or I like him very much, but you know what, there's no chemistry. What's this concept of chemistry? Where did that come from? And this is the French idea. The French idea is romance. What happens is you're sitting down one day at your desk, and you get an arrow through your heart, the person falls in love. And it could be outside marriage, it could be premarital, it could be anything. Person falls in love. So that's a French concept. It's not a Jewish concept. It's an alien concept.
Alien.
You know, the Americans have a policy. If you're not American, they call you an alien. Like you're from outer space. So you can have a green card and you'd be a resident alien. But you're an alien. After all, you're alien. This is an alien concept. This concept of love and romance is an alien concept. It's not a Jewish concept. Where do we see this? Because the Bible, the first time the Bible uses the word love is in which context? God tells Abraham, I'm going to read it on Rosh Hashanah. It's one of the passages we read in Rosh Hashanah. God tells Abraham, he says, take your son, the one you love. Where is love mentioned? Love is mentioned, the first time the Bible mentions the word love is in the context of a child, a parent and a child. You love your son. God tells Abraham, the one you love, the son you love. And the second time, it says it by Isaac gets married, and he loves his wife. So it's interesting. Why does the Torah put love of a child before love of a wife? Isn't it strange? First you've got to love your wife, then you have a child. That's the usual context. Over here it says, first Abraham loved his son, and then the son got married and loved his wife. What's going on over here? What is love? What is the Bible telling us about love? So it seems that before a person has a child, it's very hard to know what love is. Right? Person's married, but they don't have any children yet. What is love? Are they in love? What is love? So it seems that until a person has a child, they don't know what love is. True love is, this is the definition of love, the Jewish definition of love is giving with no strings attached. The true definition of love is giving with no strings attached plus eternal commitment. And this we have, where do we see this? A person has a child, it's giving with no strings attached. A person gives, and there's no hope of anything getting back. If you really want a child who's going to give you back, you better, you know, think again, because it doesn't always come back. Sometimes you're lucky if you're lucky. It's like winning the lottery. You might win the lottery one day, and you know the child might come and give you back something. But people don't have children in order to get back. They have children in order to give, which is interesting because innate to human nature is the act of giving. That's why people have pets. They're lonely, but they want to give something. Even a pet rock sometimes. You want to give. You want to feel like you're looking after something. You have a garden. You have plants. You want to give. You want to look after something. We have this tendency to want to look after some things. So people like pets. But a similar idea, a person wants a child. Why do they want a child? To give. So they love their child. What does it mean they love their child? They're willing to wake up 2 o'clock in the morning to change diapers. I mean, I've seen people walking their dogs, you know, like 5 in the morning and then walking behind them with a bag. I mean, it's very hard to comprehend. Grown-ups would do that, but they do it for a dog. How much more so we do it for a child? So the Bible is telling us is, what is love? Love is the love of a parent for a child, which is the first kind of love mentioned, which is giving unconditionally. No conditions, no strings attached. You give the child, you give the child, you give the child. The child grows up, says, bye, Dad, so long. So long, Mom. See you later, if you're lucky. When I need something, I'll come back to you. So what is that? That's love. That's true love. True love is giving, no strings attached. Plus there's commitments. It's unconditional. It's not dependent on anything. The child can do whatever they want. The parents still love the child. So that's a very important concept. That's the introduction to love in the Torah. Then the Torah says, now you can know. Now you know what it's like to love a woman. When you know what it's like to love your child, that's what love is all about. Love is giving, and unconditionally, and commitments. Then you can love your spouse. Only then can a person love their spouse. Unfortunately today, the definition of love is a French concept. Let me just talk a bit about that. Anyone over here love apples? Anyone love apples? Yeah? You love apples, right? What do you do to them? You eat them, right? Is that what you do to anything you love? We love apples. I just want to show you that we use this word love in the wrong context. It's used in the wrong context. If you love something, what we really mean to say is, I want the apple and I love myself. I want it for myself. That means I love myself. I desire it. When a person says I love, it means I desire. Right? All these movies from Hollywood, the man tells the girl, he says, I love you. What does that mean? I want you. Let's go. That's what it means. I really mean literally, that's what it means. Whereas the Jewish act of love is, the parent loves their children. What does that mean? I want to give you. I don't want you for myself. I want to give you for your own self. It's unselfish love. That's love. That's true love. True love is unselfish. The love which we use today is selfish kind of love. And plus, it's not really well defined. And we just get this concept from Hollywood. It's one of the disservices that Hollywood, besides the all the violence and all the sex and everything else, but they've utilized the French form of love and they spread it into the world. People are confused. They don't know. They're looking for some chemistry now. They think love is chemistry. It's something which you feel. If you don't feel it, you're not in love. You got to feel something. So the Jewish concept of love is giving unconditionally with full commitments. So even if it's not reciprocated, like in a child-parent relationship, love, what can I do? It's my child. I love my child. The second level is love for a spouse. Isaac loved his spouse. So, but we have to understand what love is before a person can even love their... Now, some people it comes naturally. Giving is a form of life. They can understand what it's like to love a spouse. You have someone you want to cherish, you want to look after, you want to treasure, you want to give to. That's love of a spouse. Other people, you have to go through the first stage of loving a child before you can love your spouse. Takes a, you know, a person who never has a child will never know what it's really like to love someone. It's an amazing concept. Until you hold a baby in your arms, that feeling is so precious. It's an unbelievable feeling. It really mellows a person, you know. You hold a baby, you look at the baby. This is my baby. And that's a tremendous feeling. And then a person will understand what it's like. The commitments and the giving and the total unconditional love which comes with that. The person will never know what it's like until a person has it. Okay, you have a pet. It's similar to a certain extent. The person never had a baby. The pet's the next best thing. But then comes the next stage, and then a person can know what it's like to love a spouse. So what's the next stage after that? What does the Bible tell us? It keeps on going, and it tells us, then it says, love God. Okay, love of God. And then it talks about loving one's neighbor. And then it tells you love God again. And then it tells us that God loves us. And then it tells us to love a stranger. So we have different levels of love over here. So let's go through the order over here. So number one is love of a child. Number two is love of a spouse. Person realize what it's like. When you love your spouse, only then can you come to love your fellow man. If you can love your spouse, then you can love your fellow man, even someone you're not even related to. And then you can love God. If you can't love a physical person, how can you love God which you can't even see, you can't touch? So there's different levels. First, got to understand what love is. Then you can start loving someone. First, you got to understand what it's like. Go through the emotional idea of commitment and love of someone. Then you can understand what love is. When you understand what love is, you can love your spouse. When you love your spouse, you can relate to other human beings. Because we're born selfish, very selfish people. We look in the mirror, and that's all we think about. When a person does a favor to someone, they're really thinking about themselves, mostly. It takes a lot of maturity, and takes a lot of inculcation of learning and other things to be able to relate to other people who really want to do good just for their sake. Because sometimes we do good, but it's not for their sake, it's for our sakes. We want to look good, we want to have a good feeling, but it's not for their sake, it's for our sakes. So next stage is, first we love our child, we love our spouse, and then we can relate to our fellow man. And only after we relate to our fellow man, then comes love of God. And then after that, it says love a stranger. How can you love a stranger? I don't even feel close to a stranger. If you love God, then you remember that every single human being is created in the image of God, then you can love a stranger. So there's five different levels of love. And then a person can understand love. But what mixed this up was romantic love. Romantic love is a big problem. Unfulfilled love. People think they're going to get smitten with love, and like the arrow goes through the heart. And that's what confused. If you look through the movie Fiddler on the Roof, the song Matchmaker, Matchmaker. Right, let's go back to that. Tevye's daughter, the milkman's daughter. She's singing this song, and she hopes that the matchmaker will bring her someone not only suitable in her parents' eyes, but also suitable in her eyes. That's where the whole attractive to herself as well. So attractive to her parents and attractive to her. While her father, after 25 years of marriage, suddenly asks his wife, "Do you love me?" And you know what? She can't even understand what the question is. She says, "What do you mean? For 25 years I cooked for you. I washed your clothes. I did this and I did that and the other. Now you ask me, do you love me? What do you mean?" She didn't even understand the question. So what happened was, he found out about romantic love. And she doesn't even know what that means. All she knows is commitment and giving. I washed for you. I cleaned your clothes. I cooked your food. I did this and I did that. What do you mean, do I love you? He now got the bug of the romance. And she's in the old way. The Jewish way is giving. Love is giving. What do you mean? I've been doing all these things. You mean I don't love you and I can still do these things? Why would I do these things for you if I don't love you? Loving is giving. Loving is commitment. He says, no, love now is a feeling, but you love me. He says, what do you mean? If I'm doing these things, obviously I love you. You can't separate a feeling. You can't just have the feeling, not give. If you have the feeling, you give. And the proof is that you give. If you don't give and you say, I love you, what kind of love is that? That's a bit debatable. That's a love today. That's the idea of love today, unfortunately, is a person just has sweet talk and people think that's love. Sweet talk became love. Instead of commitments, instead of giving, it's all sweet talk. That's one of the problems we have. So that's a preamble to dating problems. So what happened? Today there are no matchmakers, at least not in the regular community. And there's a void. And this void was filled with a very elaborate courtship procedure. You go out here, you go out there, you go out there, and you try it out, you taste and try, and this and then the other, and maybe after a year, 2 years, 5 years, 6 years, maybe 10 years, maybe marriage will be broached, the idea of marriage. So there's elaborate courtship procedures. And what happened was, instead of people simplifying their lives, it made it much more complicated. Because a person gets involved with this person, then they break off, and then they get involved with the other person, they break off, they have broken hearts, then they find it hard to get involved at all. And that's the breakdown over here. Whereas previously, everything was done with a shadchan. You met once, twice, and then if you want to meet again, you better make up your mind. Are you serious or not serious? You know what I mean? It's got to be a serious thing. Where is everything leading to? If it's not serious, then why meet? It's frowned upon to meet if it's not serious. Today it's not frowned upon, and there will be a meet, just for the fun of it. So we date here, and there's no commitments. We date here, we date there, we date this one and that one. There's a book called, it's a beautiful book called Marriage East and West. He calls the dating game as a vast Noah's Ark. Noah's Ark is full of different varieties. Here people are, you're like in the Ark, and you're tasting out different varieties. Date this one, date that one, date the other one. And see how many people remain single. For many years they remain single because they've dated this one, this one, this one. They still can't find the right one. Why? Because there's no chemistry. But they don't understand that. Love is something which grows. Love grows on a person. How does love grow? And this is a very important idea. Why do the parents love their children more than the children love the parents? Ever thought about it? Who loves who more? In your experience, who loves who more? Do you love your parents more, or do they love you more? The parents definitely love their children more. Much more. Parents always think about, where's my kid, where's my this, where's my that, why won't they phone me? And a kid, I don't think about calling my parents. Why should I? So that's the difference. So why do the parents love their children more than vice versa? And the answer is, they've invested in the children. Whatever you invest in, for example, mundane example, you pick up the New York Times, you look at the stock page. Which stock do you look at first? The ones you own. Why? You got money in it. You invested in it. Now, if you invested whatever it takes to raise a child today, it's a couple hundred thousand dollars. You invested a couple hundred thousand dollars in a child. Forget about the hundred thousand dollars, but you invested your life in a child. You raised the child. You invested your time, your energy, your resources in that child. Don't you care about that child? Sure you care. What did the child invest in you? Zero. Maybe a bit, but not much. Maybe the parent was sick, the child looked after the parent, and then, only then, does the child feel linked to the parent somehow. I'm invested now. When you invest in someone, then you start feeling linked to someone. That's when the bonds are created. The rabbis say the bonds of marriage, really, a person really feels linked only after the marriage, after the wedding, not before the wedding. You don't really feel linked until after the marriage. Then you feel there's a bond, then you feel the love. Why? Because then there's giving. There's giving involved. Prior to that, it's very hard to feel the bond. It's very hard to feel hooked to someone. So therefore, other writers declare that the trouble with the American marriage is our style of courtship. Let me give you an example. I'm dating someone. So what I do when I date someone, I take him out to a movie, right? Or I take him out to a disco, right? What do we do with our time? Well, basically what we do is we're watching a movie. So what happens when we're watching a movie? We're not communicating with each other. So if we're not communicating with each other, how can we find out about each other? We're dancing together at the disco. Okay, she's beautiful, this and that and the other, but I don't know what's going on in her mind. I can't communicate. I haven't communicated with her. A lot of people don't communicate. They think everything's fine. They look at each other. Physical relationship, but it's not a mental relationship. It's not a verbal relationship. And therefore, a lot of marriages break down. After 4 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, 6 years, they break down. Why? Because they wake up one day and say, hey, this guy's going on this path, and I'm going this path. I don't understand what we had in common in the first place. Why is that? Because they never spent enough time just sitting down and talking. And really, there are two things. And one of the rabbis in Lakewood today, his name is Rabbi Solomon. He's one of the famous, he's the head of looking after the spiritual welfare of the boys in his yeshiva. Yes. So he says like this, when should a person know, when does a person know when it's ready to propose marriage? You're dating someone. When do you know when it's ready? So he says, number one, if you have shared goals. Very, very important. This is one of the most important things. You look at someone's looks, you look at this and this. Okay, that's number two. Number one is shared goals. Because however nice they look, if you don't share their goals, nothing's going to happen. It's going to fall apart. It may work for a year or two, but it's going to fall apart. Why? Because one day you're going to wake up and say, hey, I want to achieve these things in my life. And she wants you to achieve these things in my life, or vice versa. And that's what's going to happen is the whole thing's going to break up. And they go to therapy and counseling and this and that. Why bother? Start from day one, knowing that you share goals. If you share goals, that's already 50% of the battle. The second issue, he says, if you appreciate each other's company, you like each other, you share goals and you like each other's company, you're the jackpot. Go for it. If you like the company and you share their goals, that's it. Because that's what marriage is all about. Shared goals and you like each other's company. But if you have one without the other, it's not going to work. But if you have both, that's when a person's going to be ready. So he talked, he discussed the issues, and you need to feel like you know each other now, and you have shared goals, and you have to discuss everything, not just the main issue of dating is to find out what the other party wants from life. That's the main issue of dating. Two things. Do you like their company? Are they nice to be around? Do you like being around them? And number two is to find out whether you have shared goals. Those are the two aspects of dating, two major aspects of dating. And unfortunately, that's what people don't know today. People think, you know, dating is just for fun. So I'm going to go and have fun. And then, you know, had a great time, you know. If we have a great time 5, 6 times, 20 times, whatever it is, we're having a great time. But they don't realize they're not having a great time because they're together. They're having a great time doing activities. What gives them the great time? The great time is not from each other's presence. The great time is from the activities they're doing. So now what happens when there are no activities? What happens when you're stuck in the same house with no activities? It's a rainy day, there's nothing to do. So what happens then? So that's when people start waking up and say, hey, we don't enjoy each other's company anymore. So that's the issue. So we have to realize is that we have to appreciate each other's company. How does a person know? And the answer is, don't go to a movie. Don't. And the second answer is, don't go to a disco. And the third thing is, don't do anything which there's some other activity going on at the same time. Do go to a restaurant and talk. Or sit in the lobby of a hotel. It costs nothing. Just sit in a hotel, that's what I used to do. Just go to a lobby, you meet over there, and you talk, and you talk, and you make a list of questions. You have to think about what's important to you. Okay, there's major questions which a person has to ask, which people don't even ask. For example, would you like to have children? A lot of people don't even ask that question because it hasn't even entered their minds. They don't even know you're bringing it up on a date. They think, okay, after 5 years of marriage, we'll start talking about it. But maybe the other person has got a different time reference. Maybe the other person doesn't want children. So when do you bring up the topic? It's got to be brought up at the early stages of dating. All the goals in life a person wants to reach. Where do you see us going in 5 years' time? Where do you see us being? What do you want to be? What do you feel? How do you like your husband to be? How do you like your spouse to be? So all these things are very, very important. So unfortunately today, certain things are stressed, which are the wrong things. We put the emphasis on the wrong things. We put the emphasis on looks. Okay, looks are important, but again, if you like that person's company, they're pleasant to be around. It doesn't make a difference with how beautiful they are, because that beauty is only going to last maybe 10 years if you're lucky, 20. It says, the Bible tells us, Samson went after his eyes. the big judge, Samson, is a dynamic man. We need him today, by the way, because he had a problem with the Palestinians, the Philistines of those days. And it says he went to the city of Gaza, and they had a massive metal door. If you look in the Bible, they had a massive metal door, which was heavy. He takes his fist, bangs it, the whole door falls down. He picks it up on his back, and he walks with it. So they were trembling. When they saw him, they trembled. Anyway, it says that he had a weakness. His weakness was pretty women. It says he went after his eyes. And because of that, it says when they caught him, they pulled out his eyes. The Philistines pulled out his eyes. It says a person should not go after in their eyes. The eyes are not the only thing. A person should not judge just by the eyes. A person's got to judge by what's called character traits. The main part of a person is their personality and their character traits. If a person looks beautiful but they're not honest, it's not going to help. All the beauty in the world is not going to help. If a person doesn't have a good work ethic, they're bone idle, lazy, or whatever it is, beauty doesn't help. So all these things, there's other things that are much more important. A person's not kind, a person's not generous. The code of Jewish law tells us when a person wants to get married, they have to look for three things. What are the three things a person's got to look for? No, money's not one of them. What are the three things a person's got to look for? It says, number one, it says, look for kindness. Where do we see this? The Bible tells us Abraham sent his servant to find his son a wife. The servant goes with 10 camels. In those days, that was a mode of transportation. Went with 10 camels. He goes to a distant country where Abraham's relatives live. And he goes and sits by the well. And he, all the women, all the girls, beautiful girls that pass by, he asks them, can you bring me some water, please? So here he is, a thirsty guy, travels a big distance. And he tests the girls to see who's going to give him water to drink. So that's the test. The test is kindness. If a person's a kind person, that goes a great way into making a marriage viable. If a person's a very selfish person, the marriage's not going to work. That's got to be, number one is kindness. That's number one thing a person looks for. The second thing is mercy. There's a slight variation between kindness and mercy. Mercy is having mercy on people. You see someone who's tired, who's this and that. So kindness is just giving. Mercy is feeling. So there's an active, it's more a thought process. Mercy is a more thought process of feeling empathy towards people. So you've got to look for the empathy. A person's a merciful person. The empathy that person has. And lastly, the code of Jewish law says you've got to look for someone with shame. What's shame? A person who admits when they're wrong. It's very important to marry someone who admits when they're wrong. Otherwise, there's going to be big arguments. You did this. I did not. You did it. You did it. No, I didn't. So what happens is shame. What's shame? You did something. So okay, I admit. I'll try my best next time. I'll be better next time. I'm going to change. I admit. And that's the process in doing teshuva, repenting on Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. The first stage is admission. We have to admit to God, you know what, God? You're right. We did this, we did this, we did this. We're going to try better. But a person comes along and says, you know what? I don't admit. The comparison and the analogy is a person goes to a doctor and the doctor says, how can I help you? The guy says, well, I'm okay. The person doesn't admit that they're sick. Imagine. It's the same thing in a relationship. The first thing a person's got to do is, number one, be kind. Kindness goes a long way. You see someone else needs help, help them. Have mercy on someone. So they come home from work, they're tired and this and that. Have mercy. Don't start straight away. And thirdly is a bit of shame. To admit a person does something they should admit. So it's three things. So not looks. Looks are not stressed. Charles Darwin, who's the man of evolution, right? The guru, the evolution guru. He talked about a British society 100 years ago, and he says, amazing idea. He says, people are more interested in the pedigree of their horses than of their spouses. The British nobility were very much into racehorses. So they would check the pedigree of the racehorses. Just like today, you buy an expensive dog, right? So you get a list of pedigrees. This is the pedigree of the dog. And the bigger the pedigree, the more expensive the dog is. So Darwin says, people are more interested in the pedigree of their animals than they are in their spouses. But the most fateful decision a person is going to make is, one of the most fateful decisions we make is who we marry. We're careful about our horses. When it comes to a spouse, it doesn't matter what pedigree, it doesn't matter where they come from, which family they come from, who their parents are. It doesn't make a difference. At one time, it made a big difference. And it should make a big difference. There's a saying in English, the apple doesn't fall very far from the tree. but we have to be careful, our pedigree. A contemporary French scholar, his name is, hope I pronounce it properly, Denis de Rougemont. He says, we are in the act of trying out and failing miserably at one of the most pathological experiments that a civilized society has ever imagined. What is the most pathological experiment of a civilized society? The basing of marriage, which is lasting, upon romance, which is passing. Marriage should last, romance is passing. It's fleeting. So he asked that question, he says, let us ask ourselves. And we talked about the other problem today is people don't know how to date or what to look for at a date. So there's two things. Number one is common goals and you enjoy each other's company. Those are the two things. And we said also a person should not go to a place and date in a place where there are external attractions going on because it just diverts the mind. And a person may be under the conception that they enjoyed, they had a good time, but the good time is not coming from the partner, the good time is coming from what's going on around them. So it's important. So that's a very important idea. Those are the two things, really, which we want to stress. Oscar Wilde once noted cynically, he says, one should always be in love. Therefore, he says, one should never get married. That's why he said it. He was married and he said, you're not in love when you're married. Marriage, love is not in marriage. And that's one of the big problems today. That's what people think. Unfortunately, this idea of romance is not in marriage. Romance is outside marriage. Once a person gets married, that's it. It's a burden, it's a chore, it's a this, it's that. So that's a secular ethic. And the other secular ethic is two things are not connected. Sex and love are not connected. Two different issues. Sex is physical and love is emotional. So therefore what? One is physical and one is emotional. Two separate things. So sex is sex and love is love. Two separate things. Judaism says no. Wrong. Those two are connected and one without the other, they have to go hand in hand. A person cannot be in love with someone in a properly constituted marriage. You have sex and love. If there's no sex, it's grounds for divorce. Plus, you can't just have sex without love. It has to be a both. It's got to be in a developed relationship. And too often the words "I love you" are only a come on for a physical relationship. And someone said, he says, love is the word used to label the sexual excitement of the young. The young people get excited. They say they're in love. The habituation of the middle aged, and the mutual dependence of the old. But the truth is, love cannot be divorced. The emotional and the physical have to go hand in hand. And that's why today too many people are scarred. Why are they scarred? Because they try to separate the two and they find that both are not separated. You can't separate the two. And people feel cheated and people feel scarred because they think they can separate. It's much easier for a man to separate. But the truth is even a man can't separate and that's why they get scarred inside. It's much harder to get married after that. Okay. What does Judaism say about romantic love? Judaism treasures the love of husband and wife. And obviously Judaism knows what romantic love is all about. How do we know? Because there's a book in the Bible called the Song of Songs. The Song of Songs was a book written by King Solomon, which is a very erotic love song. It's a wild love song, which the rabbis say don't take literally. The rabbis say don't take this love song literally. It's not a love song, even though it talks about a love song between a shepherd and his beloved. It's really a love song between man and God. It's a parable. It's not to be taken literally. The rabbi said, stressed, don't take it literally, but it's very romantic. If you read it, it's wild. So Judaism knows about romantic love. So to come along and say, you know what, Judaism doesn't talk about romantic love, does talk about romantic love. It considers ecstasy temporary and undependable in terms of long commitments. Romantic love has got to be part of a long-term commitment. We have to make it part of a long-term commitment. Otherwise, it's just a flash in the pan. It's here today and gone tomorrow. How do you develop it? And the answer is you put it part of a long-term commitment. So Judaism considers romantic love and affection in marriage to be desirable. It's one of a cluster of values that makes marriage what it is. It's part of a good marriage is to have a good romantic relationship in marriage. There's much in our historic character echoed in the Bible and Psalms and Song of Songs that discusses romantic love. So it adds a dimension to life that can come from no other source. However, when it supplants other values, it's very dangerous. This romantic love by itself is very dangerous, and we're seeing all the experiments today. And commitments and long-term relationships don't come out of it. A person who wants to build commitment, so first comes the commitment. First comes, number one, you've got to know you have common goals. Number two, you like being around each other. Then the three is the romantic love. Then a person can develop some excitement. You have the framework, you can develop the excitement. It's like building a fire with no house. You got a fireplace, but there's no house. You need the house first, the framework, and then you build the fire inside the house. Yeah.
Oh, okay. You talk about one important aspect of a relationship being, you know, having common goals.
Mm-hmm.
Could you elaborate on some examples, like what types of goals?
Yeah. So first of all is, where do you want to live? Well, I like, you know, my dream has always been to move to Australia someday. And the other person's dream is, I want to move to LA or whatever it is. Number one is, you have to come to some sort of agreement. You know, where do you like? What's the thing? Number two, what do you like to do with your day? Are you a homebound person? Are you an active person? What kind of person are you? So a person's got to come to some sort of thing. This suits me. Does it suit me? You know, we have something in common. Do we want to have kids? How many kids? What kind of kids? How do we want to raise our kids? People don't even think about it. How do you want to raise your kids? Which school do you want to send them to? What would you like them to do? What would you like to be? And these become major issues later on. How does that person get along with your relatives? And vice versa. So it's, again, that could be a big bones of contention. What kind of person? Do they have a work ethic? Not work ethic. Are you going to have to support them? They're going to have to support you. So it's got to be something where you have common defined goals already before even going into the relationship, before even building a relationship. You've got to find out the basics. Is there something over here which I can continue? Is there something over here? Is there a seed over here which I can nurture and grow?
Yeah, but what if you don't know, for instance, like how many children you want to have?
So you have to discuss it, at least discuss it, bring it up, and the other person says, okay, I accept that. I don't know how many children I'm going to have. And the other person says, but I want to know. Obviously, there's no... And the truth is, the clearer you are then, the better for everything. It's like making a contract. A marriage is a contract. In Jewish law, marriage is a contract. And there's a ketubah, there's a signing ceremony, and there's a contractual agreement. It's a binding relationship. And even in civil law, people don't realize it, but when they get divorced, they realize it. What's at stake? It's a contract. And there's division of assets and all sorts of things. So these things have to be discussed. I'm in love with that person. So if I'm not going to discuss anything, I'm not going to discuss any financial arrangements, it's better to discuss everything before, not leave everything till after, because then there's confusions. Anytime you get involved with a business relationship, you have to make everything crystal clear. Who's paying for this and who's paying for that and what's doing this and what's doing that? What's going to happen? So it's better to have everything clear before the marriage than going to the marriage and leave everything open afterwards. And then that's when the discussions start, that's when the fights start. It's better to have the fights before. And if a person's fighting before, don't continue. I know a lot of people who have marriage counseling before marriage. Heard of it? Pre-marriage counseling. And then after they get married, they have more marriage counseling. And then they end up in divorce anyway. The counselor made a lot of money. But the truth is, if you need marriage counseling before you get married, that's a bad sign already. That's not a good sign. Yes? Not only that, but you're right. You're talking about projecting fantasies to other people. What about fantasizing about other people? That's also a problem. So it works both ways. A person projects an image to someone else, and then when they go home, that's totally a different person completely. Or the other side of the coin is romantic love is fantasizing about someone. The person goes out one night and thinks, wow, she's the most gorgeous girl in the world. You go out the day, hey, where did I see that? So it's very important to have a clear picture. And a clear picture is only formed when a person is not emotionally involved. Once the emotions get into play, the emotions can hijack a person. It's very important to think clearly. And that's another danger of romantic love. Talk about love is blind. That's very dangerous. If love is blind and a person's going out, they're blind. They don't know what they're doing. And a person's madly in love. Oh, God. A person's mad. That's what I'm saying. We're mad. I'm madly in love. He's mad. They're mad. How can they make a rational choice based on being madly in love or being blind? It doesn't make sense. So therefore, these decisions, the classic Jewish way of courtship is it's made with a very clear brain. Decisions, these important decisions have to be made with no emotional attachment, before any emotional attachment. The person has to come to some kind of rational conclusion that we share common goals. It's a rational conclusion without being emotionally attached. Because first the person is emotionally attached, then they want us to try and make a rational decision, it's impossible. It's too late. You're already emotionally attached. So before even getting emotionally attached, the person's got to make the rational decision. Talk about the goals. Talk about where you're headed in life. Talk about what your plans are. Talk as much as possible before you get emotionally involved. And also see if they're nice people to be around with. They have good character traits. Because looks go, looks come, but the character traits are always there. And that's the most important ingredient is, ever been around very elderly people, but they're beautiful people. You know what I mean? With beautiful people, it's very fine, very sweet people. They're beautiful people. May not look beautiful on the outside, but there's beauty within. And that's something which we forget about today. Again, Hollywood pays a lot of stress to beauty. But beauty is only skin deep. But beneath that, there could be a monster. So beauty is only skin deep. We have to look for inner beauty as well. Something which people don't talk about is inner beauty. So much is the love for a wife assumed in Jewish society that the Bible explicitly commands us, love God and love your neighbor and love your stranger. It doesn't say love your spouse. One of the rabbis says, loving one's neighbor includes loving your wife. But it's taken for granted. Obviously, how are you going to get married without loving your wife? It's impossible. So it's natural. It's taken natural. It needs no... The Bible does not talk about cases which are taken for granted. It talks about cases which are not taken for granted. And one who perverts their love for a spouse is beneath contempt. We don't even discuss that. It's beneath contempt. We find there's an interesting law regarding romantic love. Normally we find the fifth commandment is very important. Parents, honoring one's parents is very, very important. However, the Talmud tells us, if a person is in love with a woman and his parents don't like it, what do you do? Talmud says, you don't have to listen to your parents. Why? Because you're the one who has to live your life. They're not living your life. You have to live your life. So you've made your own rational choice. It's a rational choice based on rationality and not based on emotions. A person made a rational choice. We share our goals. We get along with each other. We enjoy each other's company. My parents don't like. Too bad. This is my life. I'm living with a person. I make the decision. So we see that there is a concept of a person's feelings being involved over here. So that's what the commentaries say. If the spouse is suitable in terms of values and in terms of feeling, the parents have no rights to reject. So in other words, it's right for their child. And that's what Jewish law says. So the parents have no rights to come along and say, we don't accept. Too bad. It's not you getting married, it's me getting married. She's a good girl, she's a good person, everything's going well. Why not? What do you have against? So I don't like it. I have some feeling. Too bad, I'm the one getting married. Yes? Yes. I'm talking about I'm talking about your own parents don't like it. But you like this? You like the spouse's parents?
No, what I was going to say is that what happens if, for whatever reason, the family doesn't have the cleanest reputation, whatever.
So again, we generalize by saying the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. You can generalize. That's a generalization. There are exceptions. every generation, you have to check it out even more carefully. You have to pay even more concern. So it depends. The closeness of the relationship. So if there's a distant relationship, it's not a close relationship, it's much easier. But again, a person's got to remember that if there's not a close parent-child relationship, a person already has got to have a red light, flashing lights going off. Why is there not a close relationship? Yes? So Baal Teshuva has a new beginning. Baal Teshuva, a person who becomes observant, is considered like a newly born child. But again, a person's got to know that that person is growing up with no framework of reference, no support system. The person's got to take that into account. And people with no support system are more fragile. They're much more fragile, internally fragile, personality-wise, mentally-wise, much more fragile. We all need a support system. Parents are a support system. A person who's far away from their parents, distant from their parents, don't consult with their parents, has got no backup. Basically, they have no support system. Yes? That's also a problem. But that's why the Bible tells us, what does the Bible say? Right at the beginning of Genesis. It says, therefore a man shall leave his father and mother, cling to his wife, and be one flesh. That's when the break is made. The break is made after marriage. First, find someone, make the break, cling to your spouse. The spouse comes first, before one's parents. The spouse becomes number one in one's life. And people got to understand that. So say a person can't do that, parents always come first, shouldn't get married. If your parents come first, don't get married. If you can't make the break, don't get married. Don't put the spouse through that. The spouse says, let's do this tonight. No, I've got to go to my parents. Every time something comes up, my parents come first. So therefore, in Jewish tradition, the process of falling in love goes in stages. Even when the inside feeling of love is there, it has to be subservient to communication. First, the person's got to go through the steps. First, find out what the goal is. Don't get love involved. Don't start off by saying, I'm madly in love with you. Because then the emotion's already taken over. The person can't think straight. And you've also confused the other party. Because you know, you're thrusting emotions on someone else. And the other party also gets confused. They can't think straight either. So it's very important not to start off emotions. Always start off in a very slow, methodical way of checking things out verbally. So number one, you see someone the first time, say, I enjoyed your company. You're a very nice person. Then it could lead to, I like you. And then it could lead to, I love you. So there's the stages. A person's got to go through stages. You don't start off with the hot number of day one. You start off a gradual process. It's a building up of relationship. That's how relationships are built up. Today it's the other way around. We start off hot, I love you, love you, love you, then it turns to hate. It goes downwards. So you start on the top of the mountain and go down. You've got to start at the bottom of the mountain and build up, and not vice versa. And also, if the words are sincere, the sentiments would also be real. Words have got to be sincere. And unfortunately, there's a dating game. It's a game. People say things, but they don't really mean it. And how does a person know whether the person means it or not? The answer is commitments. I want to see it. If it's just the words, words are cheap. Anyone can say things. Commitments. And also, as we said before, love and lust should not be confused. That's Hollywood, to confuse the two things. Love is desire. Abravanel says, love is a reciprocal arrangement, where one identifies with the wants and needs of the beloved. Where do we see this? The Bible tells us, our forefather Jacob. Jacob runs away, and he goes to his uncle, and he falls in love with, classic case of falling in love. He fell in love with Rachel, his cousin. Falls in love with his first cousin. And he tells his uncle, he says, I want to marry your daughter. He says, okay, what do you have to offer me? Those days, you had to bring in a lot of money. You want to marry a rich man's daughter, you got to bring in a lot of money. He said, well, he says, I don't have anything to offer, but I'll work for you. He said, okay, 7 years. You work for me for 7 years and you can marry my daughter. So he was a day laborer, can imagine, he's looking after a sheep. He was a shepherd for 7 years to marry the daughter of Laban, Mr. White. His name was White, but really he's a black guy, Mr. White. but he was a crook. So he tricked Jacob 7 years. He marries, and the Bible tells us those 7 years were like a few days in his eyes. It's very strange, right? Person's madly in love, wants to get married, can't wait, right? Every day is like a year. Every day is like 10 years. The Bible says those 7 years were like a few days. What does that mean? And the answer is, if love is desire, those 7 years are like a million years. But if love is cherishing and wanting to give, you can wait. It's like a few days. Depends what love is. So if love is wanting, I want something, I want it now. It's like 7 years. I've got to wait 7 years, like a million years in my eyes. But if it's love is giving, I want it to give her, I want it to cherish her. So then they were like a few days. And that's really the truth of love. And that's what love is all about. So love means feeling about another person. Exactly the same as one feels about oneself. You see the other person, you're hungry, you're thirsty, you need something, how are you feeling, how's everything? We find there's a beautiful story, one of the great rabbis in our time, there's a book called A Tzaddik in Our Time, A Righteous Person in Our Time, beautiful book, Rabbi Aryeh Levin. We have a book in our library. It's a very beautiful book. And it says he went with his wife to the doctor. And the doctor says, yeah, how can I help you? He's looking at both of them. He said, our foot hurts. Our foot hurts us. So, yeah? He said, yeah. My wife's foot hurts us. Because that's what love is all about. Love is being like one. There's no two people, there's one person. A good marriage is two people think like one. It's a partnership. It's a solid partnership where a spouse is like an extension of one's own body. And that's really the concept of Jewish law. It talks about a person being one with their spouse. It will be one flesh. But before that is, it says, and Adam knew his wife. What do you mean he knew his wife? First, there's got to be a meeting of the minds before there could be a meeting of the flesh. Not like today's society, it's the other way around. But in the Jewish concept, it's the other way around. It's a meeting of the minds come first, you have common goals. Okay, now we can start discussing the next issue. But that, you have to go between that. There's got to be an act of what's called kiddushin. Kiddushin is marriage. In Jewish law, kiddushin means marriage. What does kiddushin really mean? It comes from the word kadosh. In the synagogue, we say it three times. Kadosh, kadosh, kadosh. Holy, holy, holy. There's an act of holiness. Before the physical, there's an act of holiness. Because the danger with the physical is, if there's no holiness involved in the physical, it can be an act of destruction. And that's a very, very important idea. So first comes the meeting of the minds. Adam knew his wife. And then they became one flesh. First comes the mind, and then comes the body. Not the other way around. So the ethics of the fathers, Pirkei Avot, in chapter 5, expresses it like this. When love depends on another factor, then when that factor ceases to exist, so does the love. Because if a person loves someone for an ulterior motive, I love that person, they're very wealthy. By the way, the rabbi said, never get married for money. A person who gets married for money will not have good children. It's one of the classic sayings of the rabbis. Get married for character. Get married for a good family. Get married because you like being around that person. You're compatible. But don't get married just for the money. So Thomas says, where the ulterior motive goes, the love disappears. Person marries for beauty. As soon as the beauty disappears, the guy says goodbye. Person get married for money. The money disappears, the guy says bye. So all the ulterior motives. So what is true love? True love is there's no ulterior motives involved. I love because that's the person I am. For no reason. That's the one. That's
how
all.
How often do you think people get married for ulterior motives?
Well, it depends what you mean by ulterior motives. If you say attraction, that's an ulterior motive. I'm attracted. The beauty is there. May not be the best person in the world, but the beauty is there. That's an ulterior motive. So that's not considered love. That's attraction. Love is giving for the sake of giving. So we've got to bring ourselves to that level where doesn't matter what they look like. Doesn't matter what they are right now. I love. It's like a child. Can you imagine a person sees their child and they say, that child is growing very ugly. Teeth jut out. The hair is all like this and this and that. I don't love him anymore. How do you find a parent like that? That's what we're talking about. We're talking about a relationship which is unconditional. That's true love. If it's unconditional, it's true love. You see couples sometimes. one of them becomes disabled. I saw a couple. I mean, the guy must be a big tzaddik. He's got a good place in the world to come. He's got a beautiful place, paradise. This guy's going straight to paradise. He looked after his wife for about 30, 40 years, I'm not sure. And he looked after her with such tenderness. That's love. That's true love. Not dependent on anything else. Whether she cooked for him, didn't cook for him, she slept with him, not slept with him, probably not. Didn't get anything in return. Pure love, that's pure love. That's the highest level. And that's what we're talking about is, that's the concept of love we should have as Jews. The concept of giving, pure giving. Not the concept of taking. Concept of taking is not a Jewish concept. Yes? Got a question in the back? No? Yes? Go ahead. Right. For sure. But, right, the advantage of Judaism is we don't have to rely on our life experiences. Why? Because everything is written down for us. We have thousands of years of wisdom. I'm talking from my own experience. If I had relied on my own life experiences, I probably wouldn't be married today. I would not, probably. Because it's so easy not to be married. And what's in it? If a person's really in it for themselves, it takes a lot of commitment to get married. It takes a lot of giving to get married. So therefore, if a person's just in it for themselves, where do we learn that a person shouldn't be in it for themselves? Where in society do we get the message that a person shouldn't be in things for themselves? Where do we get the idea that love is giving? Where does it come from? So it comes from our heritage, it comes from our history, it comes from our background. Without that background, where would we be? For example, let me give you an example. King Solomon was reputed to be the wisest person alive, right? King Solomon, heard of King Solomon? The wisdom of Solomon. You know the famous story, it says that two mothers had babies, and one night one baby died, and the other mother came and robbed the other mother's baby, and they switched babies. And when they woke up, the dead baby was really the live baby's was by the side of the one mother, and the live baby was at the side of the other mother. So the mother wakes up, says, "This is not my baby. You stole my baby." She said, "No, that's your baby. Your baby died tonight." So they had a fight, and they couldn't reconcile it. So they came to King Solomon. So King Solomon looks at them. Yeah. He says, "One mother says, this is my baby. The live baby is mine. And the dead baby died at night. And this woman switched. And the other mother said, no, it's my baby. And she switched." So King Solomon says, "Bring me a sword. Let's cut the living baby in half and give half each." So what happens? So one mother says, "Okay, it's a good deal." The other mother says, "No, my baby, please, don't kill it. Give it to the other woman. Don't kill it." She says, "That's the mother." So it takes a lot of psychological wisdom. But that's what we're talking about. There's so much wisdom in our books. We call the people the books. But there's so much wisdom locked into those books. If we don't read those books, we're not going to get the wisdom. It's like today. A person wants to be successful. What do you do? If you're just going to... Don't go to college. Work it out for yourself. Work everything out for yourself. I want to be successful in business. I'm not going to study anything about business. I'm just going to be successful for myself. What are the chances of a person being successful without studying? The answer are, you know, there's a chance. But it takes a lot of brains to be able to do that. And same thing with life experiences. How's a person going to be successful in their life experiences? So, you know what? I'm not going to study. I'm not going to read about other people's lives. I'm not going to research into how to run people's lives. I heard there's a guy called King Solomon, but he's a wise guy, but you know, he lived thousands of years ago. What's it going to do with me? If we base ourselves on other people's experiences, why live through the experiences ourselves? There's two ways of learning. One is by learning from other people's mistakes. And the other way is the hard way. It's learning from my own mistakes. So it's much better to learn from other people's mistakes. And that's what the Bible's all about. The Bible is trying to teach us from other people's lives. We read about Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, how they got married, how they had children. Even though we read about the children fighting, we learn about it. Oh, that's what is there. It's the ABCs of social living. And right there in the first book of the Bible, Genesis, tells us all about human relations. How do you fix your human relations? What not to do in a human relationship? How to get married? How not to get married? What to look for? What not to look for? When does love come? When does love not come? How to raise your children so they're not jealous of each other? Everything's in the Bible. Everything's in there. But the trouble is, people, you know, some people just want to learn from their own experiences. But it's better not to learn, not to be able to go through that maturity. Don't wait. Study, and a person can learn from other people's experiences. For example, the rabbis wrote a very important major work. It's called Ethics from Sinai. It's 6 chapters of pure wisdom. pure wisdom. Amazing. And they gave us all the wisdoms of the world encapsulated in short sentences. And you read them and they're mind-blowing. Yeah. Let me give you a little example. Hillel says, "Im ein ani li mi li." If I am not for myself, who is for me? What does that mean? If I don't look after my own interests, who's going to look after my interests for me? So a person should be look after their own interests. And then he says, "Im ani li'atmi ma ani." But if I am only for my own interests, then what am I? A person becomes very selfish, very egocentric. What do I become? So the words he's telling us, there's got to be a balance. There's me and there's you. A person's got to have a balance within themselves. So there's many different kinds of wisdom in this short chapters. Let me just give you one more point. The Hebrew word for love is ahava. And in Hebrew, every letter has got a numerical value. Not like any other language. Aleph is 1, Bet is 2, Gimel is 3, and so on and so forth. So the word ahava, which is love, adds up to 13, which is the same numerical value as the word 1. Echad. Right? What does that mean? What is love? Love is 1. Becoming 1. Feeling 1. And that's really what the story of, as I mentioned before, is the story of Rabbi Ari Levine. Our leg is hurting us. 1. It's 1 body. It's 1 unit. But that's the idea in Judaism of dating and love. And we'll continue next week with the next in our series. Have a good night. The lecture series, and this lecture is called The Dating Game. And the reason why it's called The Dating Game, because really it is a dating game. It's a game. People go on playing the game. But hopefully some people are serious. And for the serious people, we need pointers. Let's give some pointers. First of all, we have to discuss a bit about the conceptions in society today. We find in prior times, when a person was born, or shortly after, the parents made arrangements with the other parents for their children to sort of marry at a very early age, 12, 13, 14, 15. Obviously, in today's society, that's impossible. But when did this sort of system fall apart? If you've ever seen Fiddler on the Roof, you'll find that there's a song over there called Matchmaker, Matchmaker. And there was a system of matchmaking, which is called a shadchan. A shadchan is someone who makes a shidduch, which is dates people, puts people together. So when did the system fall apart in terms of the Jewish world? And the answer is when the Jews caught a bug. What's the bug? The bug was called romance. The bug of romance. You find romance, the idea of romance was invented by the French. Like other things as well. They invented this whole concept of romance, that a person falls in love. The idea that love is blind, the idea of romance, all these things were invented in France during the last quarter of the 12th century. The last quarter of the 12th century. It was formulated by one of the authors, Andrew Capellanus, and he has a book called The Art of Courtly Love. And over there, he spreads this idea of romantic love, which was carried to the countryside by troubadours. The singers, they would sing about romance and love and this and that. And eventually this idea, this concept took hold and spread rapidly throughout Europe until it reached even the narrow confines of the Jewish world. We find that the way the regular world goes, that's the way the Jews goes. We're part of the melting pot. And the way around us, that's the way we adopt. We assimilate into the culture around us. So therefore, it's all started with this problem called romantic love. Let's discuss a bit about romantic love. Romantic love was conceived originally on two levels. First level is pure love. What is pure love? It's purely in the mind, but it has no physical fulfillment at all. For example, Romeo and Juliet. Pure love. Romance. And usually what happens is something happens to one of the couple. And that's romance. They spread this idea of just pure love. Romance is just pure love. The second kind of romance is mixed love, whose desires be fulfilled, however infrequently. Sometimes yes, sometimes no, but it's mixed, physical and pure. So it's not 100% pure. And this kind of love, it's interesting because this romantic love does not exist, according to the French, in marriage. It's purely outside marriage. It's very strange. If you think of all the love songs that have been written, how many love songs can you think of which are to do with love songs in marriage? All the love songs, one, right, I knew you were going to say that. One love song. But all the others, they're all to do with extramarital or premarital or this and that and the other. And so that's one of the problems which is spread by romance. This idea of romance, this French concept, destroyed the world in terms of destroying relationships and filled people's mind with this concept of falling in love, and therefore they don't know what to look for. They think, I'm going to fall in love. There's no... How many times people come to me and said, you know, Rabbi, I like her very much, or I like him very much, but you know what? There's no chemistry. What's this concept of chemistry? Where did that come from? And this is the French idea. The French idea is romance. What happens is you're sitting down one day at your desk, and you get an arrow through your heart, person falls in love. And it can be outside marriage, it can be premarital, it can be anything, person falls in love. So that's a French concept. It's not a Jewish concept. It's an alien concept.
Alien.
You know, the Americans have a policy, if you're not American, they call you an alien. Like you're from outer space. So you can have a green card and be a resident alien. But you're an alien. After all, you're alien. This is an alien concept. This concept of love and romance is an alien concept. It's not a Jewish concept. Where do we see this? Because the Bible, the first time the Bible uses the word love, is in which context? God tells Abraham. You're going to read it on Rosh Hashanah. It's one of the passages we read in Rosh Hashanah. God tells Abraham, he says, take your son, the one you love. Where is love mentioned? Love is mentioned, the first time the Bible mentions the word love is in the context of a child, a parent and a child. You love your son. God tells Abraham, the one you love, the son you love. And the second time, it says it by Isaac gets married, and he loves his wife. So it's interesting. Why does the Torah put love of a child before love of a wife? Isn't it strange? First you've got to have love your wife, then you have a child. That's the usual context. Over here it says, first Abraham loved his son, and then the son got married and loved his wife. What's going on over here? What is love? What is the Bible telling us about love? So it seems that before a person has a child, it's very hard to know what love is. Right? Person's married, but they don't have any children yet. What is love? Are they in love? What is love? So it seems that until a person has a child, they don't know what love is. True love is, this is the definition of love, the Jewish definition of love is giving with no strings attached. The true definition of love is giving with no strings attached plus eternal commitment. And this we have, where do we see this? A person has a child, it's giving with no strings attached. A person gives, and there's no hope of anything getting back. If you really want a child who's going to give you back, you better, you know, think again, because it doesn't always come back. Sometimes, you're lucky if you're lucky. It's like winning the lottery. You might win the lottery one day, and, you know, the child might come and give you back something. But people don't have children in order to get back. They have children in order to give. Which is interesting, because innate to human nature is the act of giving. That's why people have pets. They're lonely. But they want to give something. Even a pet rock sometimes. You want to give. You want to feel like you're looking after something. You have a garden, you have plans, you want to give, you want to look after something. We have this tendency to want to look after some things. So people like pets. But a similar idea, a person wants a child. Why do they want a child? To give. So they love their child. What do they mean they love their child? They're willing to wake up 2 o'clock in the morning to change diapers. I mean, I've seen people walking their dogs, you know, like 5 in the morning and then walking behind them with a bag. I mean, it's very hard to comprehend. Grown-ups would do that, but they do it for a dog. How much more so we do it for a child? So the Bible is telling us is, what is love? Love is the love of a parent for a child, which is the first kind of love mentioned, which is giving unconditionally. No conditions, no strings attached. You give the child, you give the child, you give the child. The child grows up, says, bye, Dad, so long. So long, Mom. See you later, if you're lucky. When I need something, I'll come back for you. So what is that? That's love. That's true love. True love is giving, no strings attached. Plus there's commitments. It's unconditional. It's not dependent on anything. The child can do whatever they want. The parents still love the child. So that's a very important concept. That's the introduction to love in the Torah. Then the Torah says, now you know what it's like to love a woman. When you know what it's like to love your child, that's what love is all about. Love is giving, and unconditionally, and commitments. Then you can love your spouse. Only then can a person love their spouse. Unfortunately today, the definition of love is a French concept. I mean, let me just talk a bit about that. Anyone over here love apples? Anyone love apples? Yeah? You love apples, right? What do you do to them? You eat them, right? Is that what you do to anything you love? We love apples. I just want to show you that we use this word love in the wrong context. It's used in the wrong context. If you love something, what we really mean to say is, I want the apple and I love myself. I want it for myself. That means I love myself. I desire it. When a person says I love, it means I desire. Right? All these movies from Hollywood, the man tells the girl, he says, I love you. What does that mean? I want you. Let's go. That's what it means. I really mean, literally, that's what it means. Whereas the Jewish act of love is, the parent loves their children. What does that mean? I want to give you. I don't want you for myself. I want to give you for your own self. It's unselfish love. That's love. That's true love. True love is unselfish. The love which we use today is selfish kind of love. And plus, it's not really well defined. And we just get this concept from Hollywood. It's one of the disservices that Hollywood, besides the all the violence and all the sex and everything else, but they've utilized the French form of love and they spread it into the world. People are confused. They don't know. They're looking for some chemistry now. They think love is chemistry. It's something which you feel. If you don't feel it, you don't love. You got to feel something. So the Jewish concept of love is giving unconditionally with full commitments. So even if it's not reciprocated, like in a child-parent relationship, I love, what can I do? It's my child, I love my child. The second level is love for a spouse. Isaac loved his spouse. So, but we have to understand what love is before a person could even love their... Now, some people it comes naturally. Giving is a form of life. They can understand what it's like to love a spouse. You have someone you want to cherish, you want to look after, you want to treasure, you want to give to. That's love of a spouse. Other people, you have to go through the first stage of loving a child before you can love your spouse. It takes a person who never has a child will never know what it's really like to love someone. It's an amazing concept. Until you hold a baby in your arms, that feeling is so precious. It's an unbelievable feeling. It really mellows a person, you know. You hold a baby, you look at the baby. This is my baby. And that's a tremendous feeling, and then a person will understand what it's like, the commitments and the giving and the total unconditional love which comes with that. The person will never know what it's like until a person has it. Okay, you have a pet. It's similar to a certain extent. The person never had a baby, the pet's the next best thing. But then comes the next stage, and then a person can know what it's like to love a spouse. So what's the next stage after that? What does the Bible tell us? It keeps on going, and it tells us, then it says, love God. Okay, love of God. And then it talks about loving one's neighbor. And then it tells you, love God again. And then it tells us that God loves us. And then it tells us to love a stranger. So we have different levels of love over here. So let's go through the order over here. So number one is love of a child. Number two is love of a spouse. A person realize what it's like. When you love your spouse, only then can you come to love your fellow man. If you can love a spouse, then you can love your fellow man, even someone you're not even related to. And then you can love God. If you can't love a physical person, how can you love God which you can't even see, you can't touch? So there's different levels. First got to understand what love is. Then you can start loving someone. First you got to understand what it's like. Go through the emotional idea of commitment and love of someone. Then you can understand what love is. When you understand what love is, you can love your spouse. When you love your spouse, you can relate to other human beings. Because we're born selfish, very selfish people. We look in the mirror and that's all we think about. When a person does a favor to someone, they're really thinking about themselves mostly. It takes a lot of maturity and takes a lot of inculcation of learning and other things to be able to relate to other people and really want to do good just for their sake. Because sometimes we do good, but it's not for their sake, it's for our sakes. We want to look good, we want to have a good feeling, but it's not for their sakes, for our sakes. So next stage is, first we love our child, we love our spouse, and then we can relate to our fellow man. And only after we relate to our fellow man, then comes love of God. And then after that, it says love a stranger. How can you love a stranger? I don't even feel close to a stranger. If you love God, then you remember that every single human being is created in the image of God. Do you think you can love a stranger? So there's five different levels of love. And then a person can understand love. But what mixed this up was romantic love. Romantic love is a big problem. Unfulfilled love. And people think they're going to get smitten with love. And like the arrow goes through the heart. And that's what confused. If you look through the movie Fiddle on the Roof, the song Matchmaker, Matchmaker. All right, we go. Let's go back to that. Tevye's daughter, the milkman's daughter. She's singing this song. And she hopes that the matchmaker will bring her someone not only suitable in her parents' eyes, but also suitable in her eyes. That's where the whole attractive to herself as well. So attractive to her parents and attractive to her. While her father, after 25 years of marriage, suddenly asks his wife, "Do you love me?" And you know what? She can't even understand what the question is. She says, "What do you mean? For 25 years I cooked for you. I washed your clothes. I did this and I did that and the other. Now you ask me, do you love me? What do you mean?" She didn't even understand the question. So what happened was, he